Now that we're ready to explore the countryside of Britain on our own, let's hear from those of you who've already ventured out into the back roads and hinterlands of the British Isles. We're at 877-333-7425. Or by email, it's radio@ricksteves.com. Lisa's on the phone in Columbia, South Carolina. Lisa, thanks for your call.
Hi, Rick. It's nice to hear you.
Yeah. You got any ideas about traveling in Britain?
Yes, this is one of my favorite subjects when I tell people about our family vacation we took a few years ago to Europe. And our first stop was flying into Heathrow. And I, instead of going straight into London, we went to a bed and breakfast in the Cotswolds. And that was really very memorable and a nice rest for us at the beginning of our vacation with jet lag. And we had an 11-year-old and an 8-year-old with us. And
oh, no. So let's reiterate that. From Heathrow, rather than taking two jet-laggy kids into London, you picked up a car and went straight for the Cotswolds?
Yes, we picked up a car and went straight to the Cotswolds.
And the Cotswolds are charm plus. I mean, little half-timbered towns, easy, quaint country roads, a great place to get over jet lag with or without kids.
Yes, we stayed in a nice bed and breakfast. And, you know, sometimes it can be a little difficult finding a bed and breakfast when you get two kids that are not necessarily going to sleep on a cot in your room, but we found a place, and they were very nice.
Now, a great thing about B&Bs is other families are staying there. A lot of English families will be staying in B&Bs.
Yes.
So you can get the kids together.
Yes, and the people that own the B&B had smaller kids than mine, but they had a swing set in the backyard, and the kids played together, and, you know, those connections you make with people, the local people there, that's really what you remember, the kids remember, even more than which museum you went to. And
now, Lisa, do you remember when you were booking your B&Bs, is there any way to find out if they are families running the B&B, or a retired couple, or a young couple? Or
well, this B&B, I emailed back and forth with them, so I suppose I could have just asked them.
Because I think that's a great idea, if you're traveling with kids, to find B&Bs that have kids your kids' age. Because if they do, they really enjoy the just the fun of having guests, paying guests, and they've got all the gear for the kids and can be an extra bonus.
Yes. So we had a lot of fun doing that, and we went up to Warwick Castle one day, which the kids just thought was fantastic.
Now, what did your kids like about Warwick Castle? Because it's kind of the Disney sort of over-the-top designed castle for tourism.
It is, but it was
I mean, I like it. If you got kids, you got your peacocks, and you got your knights in armor, and you got your swords and shields, and you got your dungeon, and all sorts of stuff.
Yes, and with not as many gift shops as Disney, so it was nice. But we loved the trebuchet.
What is a trebuchet?
It is something that catapults a cannonball, but it operates a little differently than a catapult.
Okay.
But
and your kids got into that?
They loved that because it was huge. Two people actually had to get in there and walk the wheel around to get it cranked up. They just thought that was really neat. And the jousting was fantastic.
When you get to a place like Warwick, you'll probably want to check at the entrance at a little schedule board to see what special events are going on that might be family-friendly.
Absolutely.
Like jousting. Probably say jousting at 2 o'clock, sword fight at 3 o'clock.
Yes, and they had an excellent bird show as well.
Yeah. That's Warwick Castle. You paid $25 to get in, but it's a whole day's of entertainment.
I think I even got a discount looking it up on the internet.
Hey, good for you. Hey, Lisa, what did you do to keep your kids happy when it comes to eating in Britain with an 8 and 11-year-old?
Well, I have to tell you that we stopped and got a loaf of bread and some peanut butter and some jam or jelly or whatever they call it over there.
Yep.
And that's what we ate when we couldn't find anything else to eat. And that was very convenient to have.
You know, that's a good idea. If you got an 8-year and 11-year-old in the car, have a pantry. And you can get peanut butter in England.
You can. When I saw the peanut butter and jelly, I was like, oh, this is perfect.
You have a hard time finding peanut butter on the continent, but England, they understand the beauty of peanut butter. Are you going to take another trip with the kids?
Yes.
What's on deck?
Probably some France and maybe a little Italy.
I think that's the logical sort of next step to expose your kids to the wonders of the world. Lisa in Columbia, South Carolina, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
Happy travels.
Bye.
We're checking in with listener travel reports right now on Travel with Rick Steves at 877-333-7425. You can also share your travel stories with us in our online radio message board. You'll find it in the radio section at ricksteves.com. Jennifer has given us a call from Austin in Texas.
Yes. Hey, I'm so excited that I can talk about this part of the world. I was so surprised by it. So,
oh, tell me why and where.
Oh, I had wanted to hear Gaelic spoken as a native language, and I asked someone one time where I could do that. And on a trip back from Italy one time, I just got on a train in London. I got on the overnight and went to Inverness and across Scotland and out to the Western Isles, because that's the only place that I could find that they spoke Gaelic as a native language.
Well, now, let's talk about that for just a sec. So Gaelic is like the old Celtic language that was in British Isles before the Angles and the Saxons came. And, of course, the Welsh and the Irish and the Scots are Celtic peoples. And you've got a Gaelic language in Wales and one in Ireland. And you actually found Gaelic spoken in Scotland?
Yes, but they call it Scots Gaelic.
Scots
when you're in
Gaelic.
Scotland, they call it Scots Gaelic. And, you know, like I said, I wanted to hear it as much as I could, so I found a BBC station on the rental vehicle that I was driving. And basically, when you listen to it, you can hear the Norse influence when you're in Scotland. It's really different from Ireland.
Now, that's a very interesting thing when we think about media in Britain, because in the United States, if you have a regional accent, you're not going to get prime time. But in Britain, they actually want the regional accents to keep that sort of cultural vibrancy going. And they've actually got stations dedicated to different regions and also an attempt to keep Gaelic alive. So you actually tapped into that a little bit.
Oh, I was fascinated by it. It's such a lyrical, beautiful language, you know. So I would just listen to it all the time in my rental car.
Now, let's make sure people know what we're talking about, because you can think of Scotland, and you cross Hadrian's Wall, across the borders, you get up to Edinburgh, and that's sort of the gateway to the Highlands. And yeah, the Highlands seem remote. But from the Highlands, you go even further out into the Atlantic Ocean, and there's this ring of islands way out there, the Outer Hebrides. That's where you went?
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh, yes. You get on London, I sleep to Inverness, I get there at 8 in the morning, I run for the bus, and, you know, in Inverness, and then that takes me right across the top piece of Scotland to the most wonderful little town. This is a little town that, you know, I would be tempted to go and just spend a vacation in this little town. It was called Ullapool.
Ullapool. Okay, now, mm-hmm. So you slept on the train from London to Inverness?
Yes,
how
I've done that
cool.
Several times.
And then you catch the bus across Scotland to Ullapool, Ullapool.
Yes.
Very charming. But from there, you hop in a boat?
From there, I had to wait a couple of 3 hours, and then I picked up a three-hour ferry ride across to the Western Isles. And I was staying in Harris, which is in the south. So
Harris is the big island of the Outer Hebrides, or the big town, is that right?
Lewis and Harris is the name of the island. Stornoway
okay.
is the topmost big city,
okay.
which is a beautiful small town at the very top.
Is that the biggest town
city.
In the Outer Hebrides, Stornoway?
Ah, yes.
So describe the metropolis of the Hebrides.
You know, you almost feel like there's this sense up there that you're on the top of the world. Everything looks like it's going to curve when you look out. The buildings are low. You know, the streets are kind of, you know, curving. I had never driven on the left side of the road.
So you rented a car in Stornoway. I mean, are you just out there with rabbits or something?
No. You're out there with sheep who literally
sheep.
Own the island. They own the island. And so I get in, it's a little truck, and I realize that they don't have rental cars there, as far as I can tell.
Huh.
They have rental vehicles that people rent to haul animals.
Okay.
They pull engines. They do everything in these things, because this was a work vehicle. It had a rental thing on the side. Now, if you've never been to the islands there, Scotland and England have very narrow roads, but on the islands, there is a one-lane road, and everybody, every 10 minutes, there's a little pull-off on the side.
Mm-hmm.
So you see far off in this very wonderful kind of moon-like landscape, and you see the cars coming, and whoever wants to pulls over, and people go by. But the truth is that the sheep on the island, the sheep will sometimes be sleeping or laying out on the road, and, you know, the mama sheep is standing there going, okay, this is my territory. So, you know.
Now, when you get to the Isles of Harris and, Lewis and Harris, how can you go even farther off of the mainstream?
Well, you can take ferries out to the outer islands. They're much smaller islands that you can take further out. But the most amazing, I've been to beaches all over the world, more or less. I'm a beach person. These are the most beautiful. On the Isle of Harris, I mean, I walked around like someone had hit me in the head. I took pictures every 5 minutes. I couldn't think. It was the most beautiful beaches I have ever seen in my life, bar none.
Whoa.
Bar none. So, but then, further out from there is an island called St. Kilda. It is the last landmass between Scotland and Newfoundland. I mean, it's another 4 hours out by tiny boat.
Boat off of the Isle of Lewis and Harris?
Yes, off the Isle of Harris.
Further out toward Iceland and Greenland and Newfoundland. Whoa.
Yes, and this little cluster of islands was inhabited for thousands of years. And the last culture that lived on there, the last people left the island on 1932, but they lived on the seabirds and with the eggs, because this is one of the paramount places for seabirds, nesting, mating seabirds for the whole world.
So nobody lives there now except sort of a wildlife refuge.
Yes.
Why did you go out there? It sounds like an arduous journey.
Well, it was an arduous journey. It's because it was a once-in-a-lifetime thing to get to see this culture. This beautiful, the buildings are built into the ground.
Oh, so there are old buildings still there that are like ghost towns.
Beautiful old stones built into the ground.
So they're ghost towns that people vacated them 80 years ago.
1932.
Now, is this a tour that you take from Harris, or is there a ferry?
You have to charter a boat. You've got 30 minutes leeway because you have to have a window of weather, or you won't survive the trip.
So you charter a boat. Were you alone on this, or was there a group of people that shared
this? No, there were several people that were going. But, it's a small boat that holds maybe about 8 people. I will tell you, just not to be too graphic, but I stood outside and held on the outside so the sea spray. I mean, the people were hanging over the sides of the boat, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, it was lots of seasickness happening, let me just put it that way.
I just want to review this whole exciting adventure. You're turning Scotland into adventure travel. You can sleep on the train from London to Inverness, which is the main town of the Highlands, farther north than Edinburgh. There, you catch the bus over to Ullapool.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, you take the boat ride out
to the ferry.
To Stornoway, which is the major town on the Isle of Lewis and Harris in the Outer Hebrides. That's the far reach of Scotland. And then from there, you've enjoyed these incredible, dreamy, otherworldly beaches, and you catch this rugged little boat out to an island 4 hours further into the Atlantic, which is now uninhabited and filled with all sorts of birds.
Sheep and wild indigenous sheep that are only in those islands is the only place.
All right, Jennifer, I think we just tripled the tourism on the Isle of St. Kilda for next year. Thanks so much for your call.
Thank you so much.
All right, call again next time you have an adventure.
That would be great.
Okay,
thanks.
Bye now. Kate's on the line in Napa, California. Hi, Kate. Thanks for your call.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Got some stories about traveling in Britain?
And Scotland specifically, yes. I've been there over a couple of times. First time I went over, I took my son, who was 18 at the time, and we flew into London, and then we flew up into Glasgow. We spent our time tracing the family roots, which were not too distant. I'm third generation from Scottish grandparents. We had a really wonderful experience everywhere that we went. One in particular was up in Kirkmichael, which is just north of Dochrey, up in the Speyside area of Scotland.
Okay.
And we stayed in bed and breakfast the whole way. I took a long time to plan this out. I was driving. We stayed on all the back roads. My son was funny because he said, well, it doesn't matter if we take a wrong turn because we'll end up where we want to be anyway. It's rather small. Scotland is about the same size as the state of Maine. But we were having dinner in the restaurant of a bed and breakfast one evening, and they had fixed vegetarian haggis for us, which I know is an oxymoron, but it was true. And the owner of the inn came out and said, well, traditionally they put whiskey on top, pour the whiskey over the haggis. And I said, well, I'm ashamed to say, much to my father's chagrin, I don't like whiskey. She said, oh, and I said, but when in Rome? So I put it on the haggis, and it really did taste very good.
Oh, you got to have whiskey on your haggis. Come
on,
what kind of a Scottish person are you? But they
when
must have been kind of evangelical about their whiskey then. They probably saw you as a good Scottish American and wanted to give you a little bit of appreciation of the national drink.
They did, and when she served our dessert, she said Jeff, her husband, wanted us to come into the pub, and he had a surprise for us. And we walked in, and he had a table all set up with glasses and, wee drams, and there were 8 or 9 bottles of whiskey there, and they ranged in flavored. And, I've lived in Napa for over 25 years, and so I'm really aware of those whole nuances of wine and how different wines can have different flavors in them. And so he had the bottles arranged, and he gave me a book, and then he went over with his friends, and they were having a jazz guitar jam session, and I sat there and went through all of them.
Just on your own? You just were like self-service, self-taught? All of a sudden you're distinguishing?
Yeah, they were there to ask questions.
Yeah.
They taught me to say Glenmorangie and not Glenmorangie.
This is very interesting to me, Kate, because I've had the same experience going to Scotland and having people who want you to appreciate their drink. And it sounds like you can understand the fine nuances in wine. I have a tough time, to be honest, when people tell me about this is oaky or this is cherries or whatever in the wine.
Mm-hmm.
But when they say that in the whiskey, it's like right in your face. You know this is different. This tastes like peat or this would taste more smoky or whatever. And you really
right.
have this wonderful character, personality that comes across in the whiskey.
Absolutely, and I think that the key to that is, and this is what I learned, and then I saw why my father would take over an hour to drink one straight-up whiskey, that you just sip it. You just allow it to touch your lips and roll over your tongue.
And it becomes a very good friend.
Yeah, it's very warming and wonderful.
I was there and on my sort of welcome to whiskey experience, and I could really see how these Scottish people could become actually too friendly with their whiskey.
I think that it is a good friend to have in moderation.
In moderation, right. But, you know,
yeah,
I think a good tip is to encourage people in Scotland to go into the pubs and venture away from the beer. And if you don't know what to order, it seems like every local person has their favorite whiskey and they'd love to expose you to it. And it's generally going to be their treat and you're going to have a lot of new friends. And
It was fun because they were all lined up and I could really do...
Right.
A tasting, and the way he had them lined up, they went from the kind of the lightest to the really peaty, horrible.
Pitlochry is famous for its distillery, I think. It's a beautiful little town.
Just north of Pitlochry, there is a distillery called Edradour,
mm-hmm.
and it is the smallest distillery in Scotland. If I remember correctly, if the still there were like an inch smaller, it would have to be private.
Ah, interesting.
And it's just a sweet, wonderful, you know, white farm, and they're so pleasant there. And that has a real kind of a creamy flavor to it, that whiskey. And it's very difficult to get, especially over in this country. But they have a beautiful tour that they take there. And then they have Edradour has a cream liqueur that they make with, where Bailey's makes it with whiskey that they've just distilled, and they put in some cream. Edradour does it with 10-year-old scotch and 33% fat buttermilk. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Kate, apart from finding your whiskey roots, did you find any of your family roots over there?
Yes, absolutely. And my birth name is Cowie. And they say, oh, you're a Cowie. There are two towns in Scotland named Cowie. One is near Stonehaven, which is where my people come from.
How do you spell that?
C-O-W-I-E.
C-O-W-I-E. So you went to a town named the same as you, and probably every other person was a cousin.
In some way, shape, or form, yeah, but it was fun to be able to say, yeah. And my uncle had done all the genealogy, so we went to all the towns, and that was my sons and my first trip, as we went to every town.
Maybe if somebody doesn't know their Scottish roots, they could just go to Cowie and say they're a Cowie.
They could go anywhere and say anything, and they'd be welcome. The people there are so warm and so friendly.
I know what you mean. Hey, Kate, thanks so much for your call.
All right, thank
okay,
you.
Okay, happy travels.
Bye.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton with Sarah McCormick and Isaac Kaplan-Wolner. Our technical team includes Andrew Wakeling, Jonathan Lee, Chris Luchik, and Kate Mulhern-Graham. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. There's more online in the radio department at ricksteves.com. That's where you can listen again to any week's show, post your comments on what you hear, and send us your own original travel haiku or a short hometown brag that we might read someday on the air. And we'll look for you again next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.
Travel with Rick Steves is made possible in part by the European Union delegation to the USA. The European Union received the 2012 Nobel Peace Prize for promoting peace, human rights, and democracy. Information available at euintheus.org.